If you say to me, Steve, there's this fantastic Italian chef, you really need to follow them, I'm probably going to go and do it because I trust your opinion. We've known each other for a long while. And so the element of trust is there. We also have to, I think, train ourselves to having an element of mistrust in that. And so perhaps to question a little bit around, well, how did you come to hear about this particular person? You know, where did you get that source of information from? You know, had you done your diligence? So if you look at, again, from the security standpoint, what I'm building out here is a supply chain. I'm talking about assessing the integrity of my supply chain.
Right.
Something that security guys have been doing since, you know, time began.
You're listening to the ISF podcast for your organization's better cybersecurity. Your host, ISF CEO Steve Durbin, is an expert in leadership, business culture transformation, and cyber strategies for today's top enterprises. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. Today, we're bringing you the second conversation with Steve around the increasing impact of technology on society and business. Steve, societies have always been divided, of course, but how future divisions may manifest is less certain today. Do you anticipate that we're going to continue to see a historical dividing line between East versus West and around nationalistic ideological battles? Or do you think that there's going to be a new wave of division emerging, one that emphasizes the fault lines between people not at a national level, but through their personal identities, interests, beliefs, hobbies? Is that where we're heading?
I think the answer to that is probably a combination of the two, to be perfectly honest. I think, you know, dividing lines, historical dividing lines, will probably remain. The issue is the relevance or the importance that are attached to them as you then go forward. And I think that what we are going to see is, and we're starting to see it already, of course, very much more a future that's being defined through the eyes of technology, through the eyes of social media. And those traditional dividing lines are being sort of integrated, if you like, into that. So what I'm trying to say, I suppose, is that we're going to see people, yes, being brought up with some element of that division, but also then creating their own perspective through the lens of technology. And if you think about that, that places a huge importance on ensuring that the information, the data, the news flow, if you like, that people are able to access has high integrity, has a degree of necessary availability, because people will become dependent upon it. And I'm sort of moving here into things like, you know, we always capture certain elements of information and assume, because we're holding it on our phone, for instance, that we'll be able to then access it at the airport, at the, you know, the supermarket, and so on. And that's a significant change from the way that we've ever done things in the past. So we're in this period, I think, of evolution, where we're migrating away from perhaps some of those historical, relatively easy to understand, actually divisions, to a much more highly complex space where data information is very much more instantaneous, and people perhaps are giving it a lot more credence than sometimes it deserves, frankly. And so I think that if you then look at the sort of the future, what does that all mean? It means that we have to really ramp up all elements of education so that we are training not just ourselves, but also our children to adapt to this world of shifting data, to be somewhat skeptical about some of the information that we're receiving. And as I say, that will, I think, become the sort of dividing lines that we're starting to see. So I do think that there will be more of an emphasis necessarily around then things like interests, beliefs, hobbies, as you mentioned, because those are the sorts of things that people are going to be latching onto and are going to be using as their, you know, North Star, if you like, in terms of how they are making up their minds, as opposed to, as I say, in the past, where you had some perhaps much more traditional lines, which might have been around as you said, East versus West, or perhaps around religion and those sorts of things. So I think that's, I think we're in this period of complete metamorphosis.
It seems like not only do we have to receive the information about division, but newly we have to analyze the information integrity and do a second layer of consideration that I think is new.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I think the real sort of concerning point in all of that is the question that you have to ask is, are we ready to do that? Are we equipped to do that? And I'm using sort of we collectively here, you know, because of course some people are, but we will inevitably see much more cynicism coming in, I think, to some of the messages that are being transmitted via some of the more traditional media. So the press, for instance, doesn't have as strong a reputation today as it used to, which I think is something of a shame, because we need a strong media to keep, you know, some of the more traditional institutions in check. I'm thinking about governments, for instance. But there is a degree of, you know, cynicism around the way that it's reporting, because some of the media has moved along party political lines and so on. So we've lost some of that challenge. And certainly it would be nice to see some of that coming back.
Right. Well, this uncertainty is obviously going to create a very difficult future, not only for individuals, but for businesses, especially with businesses that have a global presence where they have to navigate through potentially long periods of deep division, whether it's at an international, organizational, individual level, while still maintaining global vision, value, purpose for the organization itself. Is that a fair assessment of the new responsibility for business enterprises in the modern era?
I see it as an opportunity. So, you know, there is an opportunity for anybody who's running a business to be able to provide, I think, some of the guidelines, some of the stability that is lacking in other parts at the moment. And, you know, we've talked in the past on the podcast about the emergence of the chief executive or of the leadership within an organization as sort of setting the way in which business is done, that people can then consolidate themselves around support. And I still think that role is a very important one. And I think that it's one that we'll see emerging very much more, because one of the things that if you get it right, you're able to do is provide that sense of common purpose. And people like to have a common purpose. People like to unite around something. And I think the concern that I would have in a sort of scenario that you have described of this constant change, needing to, you know, understand what's happening in all of the different jurisdictions that you're moving into, which no doubt provides a sense of continuous headache for a variety of different people in an enterprise. I think all of that provides a significant opportunity for the organization to really get the best from its people, provided it can, as I say, give them this sense of purpose and consistency and fairness. And it will be interesting to see how many organizations emerge to take advantage of that, because I don't think we're seeing it just yet. I think that there are some very large organizations, particularly in the tech space, that have perhaps imposed their perspective on the way that they want things to be done. But I'm talking about this being the reverse of that. I'm talking about the organization almost evolving from the ground up, if you want to look at it that way, where leadership is taking its sense of purpose from the general grouping of people that it has within the enterprise who are all concerned about different issues. And it serves as a means of, I suppose, filtering out, determining direction, determining what is right and what is wrong for that organization. Now, again, if you step back from that, you think about it, you're talking about leadership, people in leadership having very, very strong skills around things like empathy, around being able to consolidate opinions, not being afraid to challenge or be challenged. And I think that is the way that organizations will change over a period of time, because it also maps quite nicely to some of the evolving generational norms that we're starting to come about. And, you know, the one thing that is going to be so important that will differentiate the winners from the losers in the organizational stakes is those organizations that are able to consolidate this overall sense of corporate purpose with purpose of the individual. whatever that looks like. And if we can do that, then I think that we'll create something that's particularly special and magic.
It sounds like business enterprises are going to be playing a much different role in people's lives than they used to. If this becomes the place that people find their purpose, not that in the past people haven't found purpose at work, but there have been other places for them to find it. And this sounds like the leaders who you said will be the winners are going to understand that this is a job, but it's more than a job for their talent pool. It's a place to, as you said, find steady, consistent values, expression of values. That seems different to me.
It is different, but I think it's what it's doing is people are looking for this vacuum that we live in at the moment to be filled.
Yeah.
You know, the traditional vacuum fillers, if you want to call them that, would be perhaps our politicians or, you know, those sorts of things. Well, the general sort of confidence in that has diminished significantly.
Yeah.
It's polarized in certain areas. It doesn't matter where you want to pick. You could pick the United States, you could pick the United Kingdom, parts of Europe, of course. We've seen much more polarization there and a degree of disappointment, I would suggest, in perhaps some of the more traditional leadership models that we've tended to take for granted, I think. And so there is a vacuum. And how is it going to be filled? Is it going to be filled in our schools? Well, probably not, because that isn't working as well as it ought to. And so I think that the only thing that seems like a logical place would be enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, people, when they make a decision to join a business, they're doing it for a reason. One would hope there is a set of commonality across why people are doing what they're doing in some of these businesses. And so I do think that there is an opportunity there. And of course, then once people move on from those organizations, they will take some of the good and also perhaps leave behind some of the bad into a new venture, whether they do that on their own or whether they do it somewhere else. So the sort of the power, I suppose, of that is immense. The other thing about it is that businesses today are very much more global. You mentioned this, you know.
Right.
That's not all bad news. Actually, it's very good news because it's such a sort of a mixture of different perspective that isn't highlighted as negative difference. It's highlighted as perhaps challenging difference, but people still are commonly united behind a set of corporate goals, which is to deliver on whatever the strategy might be and so on. So you can start to see how people, ideally anyway, will move more towards that because it's, you know, relatively well articulated, a group of common-minded individuals brought together to achieve a common aim, enabled through technology, with a degree, I think, of control where you can see that you personally are able to make a difference. I think all of those things are hugely important going forward from a societal standpoint today. And I think some of those really are what we're lacking at the moment.
I like that you're seeing global relationships as an opportunity, and I agree entirely. So let's talk through then some of the threats that might arise. There are benefits, there are positives, certainly, but there are uncertainties, especially sources of information, social identities. And I'm curious how you think those uncertainties will play out. So let's consider what might happen if everyone is tending to get their information based on facts, they feel most connected to their community identity. What's the result of that from a security perspective?
Well, I suppose the assumption in all of that, if it's all going swimmingly well, is that the data, the information has integrity about it, that it hasn't been tampered with, that it hasn't been changed in some way, shape, or form. And there's no high degree of certainty with that at the moment. And therein lies the challenge from the information security standpoint. We know that bad actors do change information. We know that misinformation, disinformation, these sorts of things are very common. We've spoken about that at some length on the podcast in the past. And those are the sorts of things that we need to be looking out for. So I think there are two elements to this. The first is the role of security, if you like, the information security professional, really is elevated significantly in terms of importance.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have to do everything that we can to make sure that confidentiality, integrity, and availability, those three elements remain. And we have to do that across a whole range of different systems. And undoubtedly, we will have to see the social media organizations really standing up and taking more of a leadership role in this space, which they're not doing at the moment.
Right.
There are a number of things that they could very easily do, should they choose to, that they don't. And so we're going to see, I think, very much more regulation in that space, necessarily, because they simply aren't stepping up themselves. So that's fine. We need to see regulators having very much more strength in what they're prepared to do in order to deal with some of the societal issues that are being exacerbated, I would say, through social media. So that's the role of information security and indeed regulation on that side. But the other piece of it, you know, is down to the individual. And this is where I was, you know, touching on earlier, this issue around training, education, if you like. Because you have to be able to have a degree of healthy skepticism around your interpretation of the information that you're being fed.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have an elevated degree of personal responsibility for access to the information, use of the information, storage of the information, and the actions you then determine are appropriate for you to take based on your assessment of all of those different elements that you have received. And I keep coming back to the point that that is an education thing.
Right.
Because, you know, far too often we see people assuming that because they've seen something, it must be right. And this is how, of course, threat actors and bad actors in general take advantage of the opportunities that present themselves to them, because everyone is so busy. There is this underlying inherent trust that what we hear is reality. So somebody phones you up pretending to be me using all sorts of voice generated blurb. And lo and behold, before you know it, you know, a fairly rational individual such as you is transferring a significant amount of money to somebody they've never heard of because they believe I've been involved in a car crash or have a friend who can't get back from, you know, the far flung part of the world.
Right.
So, you know, that sort of challenge in the moment, that sort of skepticism, which sounds awful, really, because, you know, you want to be able to trust. But we're going to have to, I suppose, not become less trusting, but find ways in the moment of filtering better than we do currently. And that is a real challenge. And we have to be educating people from very early stages in schools to be able to do that. Because, you know, our children are the ones who are using technology first and foremost, as everything else. And so we need to be providing them with guidelines as to how they can validate the appropriateness, the veracity of any of the information that they then decide to take on board and use. So I think that that's a sort of roundabout way of getting to addressing the essence of the question you were asking. But it's complex and it's evolutionary, and it's not going to be done overnight, and it's going to require us to invest a significant amount of time and indeed money and resource into all of these areas. And some of the responsibility for that lies with government. A lot of it will rely with the private individual.
Yeah. Let's talk about what happens if people receive information based on facts, but there is a strong national identity that people identify with primarily. I think we're seeing this increase of nationalism, even as we have more global enterprises, even as we are cross-populating and pollinating, perhaps more than ever before in business. That nationalism piece is a big one.
It is. And I think that, again, we have to be very careful when we talk about this, because, you know, there's nothing wrong with a sense of identity. There's nothing wrong with a degree of nationalism, provided that it doesn't stray into the areas of ideology and the desire to enforce your ideology or your nationality on other people. You know, there is an assumption that for everybody to get along, there needs to be give and take. We can't divorce some of these very simple facts of life, like, you know, migration, nationalism. They're all becoming intertwined and put into this sort of melting pot. And to a certain extent, we've had all of these tensions in the past. But again, I come back to the role of technology in all of this. And what technology is very good at, of course, is speeding up the way in which information is being shared. And we're seeing that. Social media is very good at allowing you to share views, to understand what's going on. And for every, you know, good use, there is a potentially dubious use. But, you know, the world is a very fast-moving, fast-changing place at the moment. And some of it is being constructively driven by technology, but also some of it is could be better driven by technology.
Mm. It could play out that sources of information would not be based on facts, but on opinions. And we have a couple different scenarios where people are receiving information based on opinions and they are aligning themselves most on community, not nationality, or they are identifying themselves mostly based on nationality. So I'm just shifting into what are we to do when our information is not based in facts and we might be aligning with different factions? Tell us. I know you said people better equipped than you, but you're the best one I know. So let me know what you think.
Let's take social media for a moment, okay? So that we can understand some of the challenge that we're talking about. If you say to me, Steve, there's this fantastic Italian chef, you really need to follow them, I'm probably going to go and do it because I trust your opinion. We've known each other for a long while. And so the element of trust is there. We also have to, I think, train ourselves to having an element of mistrust in that. And so perhaps to question a little bit around, well, how did you come to hear about this particular person, David? You know, where did you get that source of information from? You know, had you done your diligence? So if you look at, again, from the security standpoint, what I'm building out here is a supply chain. Mm. I'm talking about assessing the integrity of my supply chain.
Right.
Something that security guys have been doing since, you know, time began. But those supply chains have now become so much more complex that the amount of effort that's required to really assess the integrity of it so that we can really trust it is significantly more than it ever was. Doesn't mean we can't do it. Of course we can. But what I'm saying is that we need to be very much more focused on making sure that what we actually hear, what we see, what we act upon is our reality and that we can stand behind it. And that is no different from what we've been doing with supply chains and should be doing with supply chains going forward. And of course, we've seen all sorts of challenges with that. And that's why, you know, certainly when, you know, I talk to not just ISF members, but also business leaders, supply chain is up there as being one of the major challenges that are out there today. So I think, you know, just from that very sort of simple example, you can begin to see that all of these sorts of things are no longer discrete and separate. And so if we look at it's why when people ask me about security and what is so interesting about it, my response is usually that it's so integral to everything that we do that whether you're interested in it or not, you can't avoid it. So it'd be a good idea to become a little bit more interested in it, and then you might be able to protect yourself. And all of those things take on, I think, much more importance as we go forward and as we, you know, use technology for pretty much everything on a daily basis.
I love this analogy of the supply chain to my life, to non-security people's lives. That I think I'd never considered that before, but trust but verify is going to be something that a layperson has to engage in. That's really interesting.
It is, you see, and the thing about it as well is that once you've done that trust but verify piece, what you then start to do is to build out a number of people that you absolutely do trust.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a positive and a negative. And that is also something that we need to consider. What happens when these trust-based norms that we've defined for ourselves fall apart? And we're seeing that in all sorts of elements of society at the moment. It doesn't matter whether it happens to be, you know, news readers that have got themselves, you know, accused of doing things that nobody imagined they would, or whether it's anything else. So we should never underestimate, I think, the challenge of this trust but verify. It's hugely important and hugely difficult. And it's a constant process, very much like the supply chains. We can no longer assume that the supply chains we use for commerce, because we tested them today, will also have that degree of integrity tomorrow.
Right. We are in challenging times.
Oh, indeed.
What can leaders do, and how soon do they need to do the thing that they need to do to ensure that their enterprises are safe, trustworthy, that their people are on board with this? Where do leaders go?
Well, I think the first thing that the leaders have to do is assume that none of those things exist, which may sound very, very cynical. And I don't mean it to be, but I think that you have to start from a position that we can do better, that we aren't, you know, perfect, that it will need to constantly change to reflect the way that society, people, commerce is evolving. And I think that we have to also assume that we will get things wrong. And so then your attention begins to switch to, okay, well, in an imperfect world where I'm trying to do the best that I can, what do I need to do? Well, I constantly need to be updating my situational awareness of my overall business landscape. I need to be making sure that people understand it's okay to trust but verify, to your point. I need to be making sure that people understand it's okay to challenge, to do things differently, in a constructive way. I need to be making sure that my communication is clear in all of the forms that I'm using. And so these are very simple things. So for me, you know, in answer to your question about what can business leaders do, they can return to simplicity. It really is not difficult. You know, in business, we do a lot of things because we always used to do it that way. And we just put things on top of each other and built this sort of mishmash. And that's why I have so much time for small organizations, startup organizations, because they've got the freedom of starting with a somewhat blank sheet. And so they can do, you know, exceptional things because they don't have history to deal with. And I think that if those of us who run organizations that have been around for a while, I mean, the ISF has been around for over 30 odd years, if we can perhaps strip some of that back, just question why we're doing things the way that we're doing, you know, from a constructive standpoint, from a leadership perspective, then we will make massive advances and take more people with us than if we are constantly going back to perhaps some of the traditional policies. And, you know, we have got to an environment where we've got hybrid working, whether you like it or not. What we should be doing is saying we are in this environment. How can I now adapt to a new way of working that best suits the needs of my client base, of my employees, of my shareholders, and let's all move forward?
It sounds to me like what you're saying is that in addition to skills like empathy, creativity, listening, having a strong voice and inviting the strong voice of people within the enterprise, those things are going to be more important than ever because people are going to have to assess, like you said, people who have enterprises that have the weight of legacy. Legacy is a great thing, but it can also hamper evolution. So I feel like we're coming back to something we've been talking about for years, these soft skills, these hard to quantify abilities of leadership are going to be really important in this situation where we are divided.
I think they are. I think they actually always have been. I think we've been able to do without them. We've sort of, you know, managed to shuffle along without them. I think what's happening now is that there is a much brighter light being shone on the need for them. And some people are stepping up to that and some are being found wanting. But it has always been thus. You know, we're not talking about anything that's massively different. We're talking about change. We're talking about evolution. We're talking about the ability to adapt. You know, there was a bloke some years ago called Charles Darwin, who made a very successful living out of talking about this. So it's not new, is my point.
Right.
Some of the basic principles will always remain. They will just morph and change, and our environment will change, and those who succeed and survive will be those that are able to take all of that and adapt to it in a very positive way.
Well, lots of food for thought today, Steve. I think really good insights, as always, but this feels like a different perspective for me. You know, you've pulled me into this personally to shine a light on my responsibility, where I am going to be called on to secure my own supply chains. I've never thought about it that way, but thank you for making that point. And thank you for the breakdown of facts versus opinion, nationality versus local community. I feel like this is clarifying. So, thank you, as always. Why haven't you accepted my Facebook friend request yet, though? I want to see your cooking posts. I keep sending it, you keep deleting it.
Didn't think it was you.
Okay, okay.
you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast, and we'd be pleased if you'd consider sharing the episode. To become a member, get in touch with Steve directly at steve.durbin@securityforum.org or on LinkedIn. Check out all our media and resources. All of it is there to support you at securityforum.org. Don't miss our other podcast, Dear InfoSec, sharing conversations with members about the real-world applications of ISF research. The ISF podcast is produced by TalkBox Productions and Tavia Gilbert. Thanks for listening.